Hello and welcome to another episode of FinTech Focus TV with me, Toby Babb. Today we are at the EMEA Fixed Trading Conference here in London, and it is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to Nick Philpott from Zodia Markets. Nick, how are you?
I'm very well. Lovely to see you, Toby.
Listen, lovely to catch up beforehand. Yep. We've just been chatting the breeze about a subject I'm super passionate about.
Yeah.
I know you are too.
Mm-hmm.
You're on a panel later on today here,
here
at the Fixed event, talking about boom or bust within digital assets. It is a subject I've been speaking about, it feels non-stop for the last couple of years. I told you beforehand, we've done a panel at the end of last year about whether this is the year.
Yep.
I guess that's probably a bit of the theme of what you're talking about today, but give us a synopsis of what you're going to be talking about and what's the order of play.
I'm going to be trying to explain to people that digital assets have gone through something of a personality cult. Yeah, they've gone through that same boom and bust that a lot of other industries historically have gone through. Yeah, railways in the 1840s, even bicycles in the 1880s. Everything has that sort of cycle, and now we're into this phase where actually hopefully more serious people are actually engaging and using the technology for what it was, I believe, originally designed for.
Yeah, and talk to us about that. So when you talk about the technology originally designed, there's a lot of conjecture about what people believe that to be, from money laundering to
scams,
improving markets.
Sanctions evasion. Exactly.
And I feel like that's a little bit of an outdated sort of conversation.
Completely.
And I'm sure you're probably in that same camp as well.
Absolutely.
But tell me a little bit about what you actually feel that it's there for.
Well, I think it's going to undo what Mark Andreessen refers to as the original sin of the internet. So back in the early 1990s, Netscape, which is where he was, and Microsoft were working with some of the big payments companies to put payments into the browser. Yeah, and the browser was only a couple of years old, and frankly, they failed, which is why we still have payment gateways today. Mm-hmm. So if you go onto a website to buy something, you click to buy, and then it goes, okay, hang on a minute, I'll take you to another page, Banco Santander, Visa, RBS, whoever, you do a bit of security stuff, and then you come back to actually trying to buy the thing that you want to buy. The reason you have that is because payments and money, assets, finance is not internet-based today. Mm. You have to have a gateway to go from the internet to these centralized, relatively simple systems. If you can actually put finance, assets, payments, everything else on the internet, then you can have the accessibility, the utility, the spread and the availability of the internet in financial services.
I think this has always been one of the, I mean, we were talking about the frustrations of this beforehand, right?
Yeah.
This is whilst a fantastic industry and one of the most stable and established in all business everywhere, the financial services industry has long been a laggard technology-wise, and we know why, with regulation, etc. It's an important aspect to be conservative in many aspects, but it also feels to me like there's a tremendous missed opportunity. And I feel that that's becoming more democratised recently with the advances that we've seen and the adoption of, the widespread adoption now of cloud within it. And as you said, look, it takes a while for rail transport to overtake barges and everything else like that as well. So coming back to that boom and bust piece and looking at whether it's 2024 or 2025, is this the phase where digital assets is now thoroughly mainstream?
I think so, because we're charging sort of head on at the part of the system that is the bit that holds all the other parts back. So a lot of attendees here, for example, their companies will have a tokenization initiative. They'll have tokenized a government bond or a carbon credit or something like that. The problem is that if we are able to move that carbon credit 24/7 with the utility of the internet, the thing is, if we execute our trade today, it's a Thursday, our cash won't actually move until Monday morning, which is ridiculous in a day and age where if you go onto Amazon and order something physical stuff can be on your doorstep the same day.
Yeah.
The fact that finance can't move ones and noughts with that speed is kind of an indictment. Frankly, it's a bit of an indictment. Yeah. So by tokenizing cash, which has unfortunately been called stable coins, but it's in a sense just putting money onto the internet, that's when you can start to get that interoperability. The other part is that original sin that I mentioned. The sin in that was that the entire economic model of the internet had to be predicated on advertising.
Mm.
So the websites had to try to collect information about you. Are you male, female, old, old or young, or so on and so forth? What are your appetites?
Yeah.
Whereas instead, if you have a system where you're able to follow the money, you're able to look at the behavior of the wallet, because you can tie payments and consumption together, then you don't need to capture all of that personal data anymore.
Yeah.
You can just follow the money.
It's an amazing opportunity, isn't it? And I'm excited. I'm certainly a subscriber and excited to where things happen. Talk to me about Zodia Markets and where you guys fit into the ecosystem. You're here at Fix. We were talking beforehand about the power of the community and everything that comes into it as well. tell us a little bit about what you do, you personally do there, and the business itself.
So I'm one of the co-founders of a company called Zodia Markets. There are two Zodias. There's us and our sister company, Zodia Custody. Both are majority-owned subsidiaries of Standard Chartered Bank, which is where I was for many years. Standard Chartered Bank, for those who are not familiar, it's a UK-based bank, specializes in emerging markets, so Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. A lot of people talk about when are the institutions going to come into digital assets. I would say we are probably one of the first who's actually made a meaningful move. BlackRock and the like are following on, and Franklin Templeton doing some great things as well with tokenizing money market funds. Mm. A lot of what we're doing is bridging basic banking, because a lot of our counterparties and actors in the market still struggle to get access just to basic bank accounts. Mm. Certainly they struggle to get access to foreign exchange and to things like that. So we're merging the two to try to de-risk the whole thing, plus also to allow corporates, because a lot of the activity we're seeing is amongst corporates, particularly in cross-border payments. So for example, if you're trying to import oil and you're in Africa and you're paying someone in the Middle East, it's very strange that you have to use the correspondent banking system, which will send you west. You have to go through the United States, through the dollar system, and come back around the other side. Mm. With something like a stablecoin, you can go east. Yeah. You can go point to point, very much the same as you would send email. You wouldn't send an email, send it through the United States and expect it to land the next day.
Yeah.
You expect it to go from here, maybe hop, and you expect it to be instantaneous. Money should be like that. It should move like email.
It's amazing, isn't it? And how's it? So tell me, how's it been going? How long have you been running?
So we started in September 22, probably, you could argue it, but probably the worst time you could possibly start a crypto company. Yeah. We had Three Arrows Capital, Terra Luna, Celsius, Voyager Digital, more than I've forgotten. Then we had FTX, then we had the three banks.
We were launching a documentary at that stage about the era of convergence of traditional and decentralized markets. I feel your pain.
I know, you'd open the paper and just go, what now? So originally we were focusing very much on bringing traditional practices from a bank, you know, governance, KYC, controls, audit, all those sorts of things, and trying to be a very traditional brokerage.
Which probably actually makes it the ideal time to do that, right?
Correct. However, the actual bigger part of our business is stable coins for foreign currencies. Mm. If you look at the top 20 countries in terms of crypto adoption, a lot of them are emerging markets. So being able to bring Standard Chartered's dominance in a lot of those markets and its expertise and understanding, and combine that with digital assets, which you might find some demand for crypto and digital assets here in the UK, but in countries, you know, in emerging markets where currencies are subject to massive inflation, huge volatility, central banks may not necessarily be reliable, local banks may not necessarily be reliable, there is a thirst for an alternative, and providing that access. And that's not just with natural persons, you know, with the consumer, but also with corporates. You're trapped cash, slow payments, corporates having to pay demurrage for oil imports and those sorts of things. If you can bring those efficiencies, then it's a huge opportunity. So far, January was better than 2023, February was better than January, and we're on track for March to be better than February.
Exactly where you want to be then.
Yeah.
And tell me what the runway looks like. What does the rest of 2024 look like? What's some of the big things that are happening with the business and the brand?
At the moment, if you look at stablecoins, for example, about 99% of stablecoins by market cap are US dollar denominated. Mm-hmm. And it's split, broadly speaking, between the US issues, so USDC, Circle, Paxos, PayPal, and so on, and then the Euro dollar style issues, so Tether, for example. Actually, we've managed to find 24 currencies with stable coins attached to them beyond the US dollar. Mm-hmm. So trying to bring some life into those, and something I'll be speaking about today is equities and T+1 settlement. Mm. So in May this year, US and Canadian equities moved to T+1.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, that takes us back to the heady days of 1933 when we used to settle T+1. So excellent, we've gone all the way back with our modern technology. We've equaled the 30s, marvelous. If you are in somewhere like Singapore, you suddenly lost a day to match and settle your foreign exchange transactions because you're running against the ticking clock of your local FX cutoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas instead, if you buy a Sing dollar stablecoin, you can carry that through into US hours and you can still settle it in US hours.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, it's got some upsides and some downsides, but fundamentally what it's going to do is it's going to buy you time.
The T+1 issue is obviously one of the dominant conversations that's going through here. I think there's side work streams that are happening all the way through that have been blocked out throughout all of it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot happening in this space at the moment that's creating a sort of window of opportunity there for people to come up with solutions to these. So I think this industry has often been guilty of providing for solutions for problems that don't exist you know, in many sort of respects with the tech that's been used.
Yeah.
I actually think this is a sort of fundamental year for solving some of the industry's pain points through really innovative technology, a lot of which is exactly what we've been talking about so far today.
If it allows them to have a use case that allows them to take that first tentative step, where they're not providing services to clients, something like that I just described, you're using it for internal treasury purposes.
Yeah.
You're using it just to buy your ops team's time. I'm not prepared to make the perfect the enemy of the good, so if that's your first step to opening a wallet, to understanding these assets, understanding the blockchains upon which they sit, then fine.
Yeah,
and if we manage to save people a huge, huge headache with T+1, I come from traditional finance, I don't like to see people suffering from a questionable unilateral move in terms of just how much disruption it's going to cause.
Yeah. With so many people having come from traditional finance into the space, as you have, I think as you said, it was an exodus in 21-22, the start of 2022.
Yeah.
It then sort of thawed a little bit with people sort of dealing with a little bit more suspicion of the space, and now we're starting to see that sort of uptick again of, which I think is a really important thing, right? To have a decentralized market attracting top players within within the traditional markets.
Yeah.
That's been a wonderful thing to see. So hopefully we can continue to see more of that over the course of this year.
Definitely.
Going back to your panel, looking again at that boom or bust theme of it all, you've got an all-star cast in there, including some old friends of yours.
Yes, I do. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. Gonzalo was on it last year and a fantastic person to speak to at that sort of stage as well.
Yeah,
and I'd be really interested to actually look back at that and see his predictions and what's happening from it. But if there's one message that you'd want the audience to take away from that conversation today, what do you think that would be?
It's the digital assets for all the front page news stories and the lawsuits and all of those sorts of things. All it is, it's just putting money and assets on the internet. If you look carefully, they're not on the internet today. Every other industry, almost every other industry, from maps to music to multimedia to airlines, they've all done this migration.
Mm.
Just follow them.
It's time.
Yes, we all use the internet day to day. Why can't you use it at work properly?
Absolutely agree. Well, look, listen, it's been wonderful speaking
to
you, Nick.
Thank you, Toby,
for coming on the show. And thank you all for watching. We'll see you on the next episode of FinTech Focus TV. Thanks a lot.